105 years ago, this church was founded. Here's how the event is described on our church's website. And I don't know who wrote this. Who wrote that history on our website? Anybody know? Grace? Well, perhaps Grace wrote this. On the last Sunday in April 1913, Dr. Franklin Baker, previously the Unitarian minister in Sacramento, preached the first sermon to what would become the First Unitarian Church of Long Beach. In the following week, at the law offices of Lewis N. Wheelton, later the mayor of Long Beach, the church was organized. At that meeting, the following bond of union was adopted. The religion of this church is free, not creed-bound, scientific, not dogmatic, spiritual, not traditional, universal, not sectarian. It stands for the realization of the highest moral and humanitarian ideals of the world's noblest teachers, and to the cultivation and dissemination of the spiritual qualities of reverence, peace, and love as exemplified in the life of Jesus of Nazareth. We've been talking for the last several weeks about the history of Unitarianism and Universalism, so it's time today to bring that history up to date and to make it local in the history of this congregation. So the Reverend Dr. Franklin Baker, who preached our inauguration sermon on the last Sunday in April 1913, had been the minister of the Congregational Church in Eureka, California, until 1911. At that point, he declared himself a liberal minister and broke away from his more evangelical church to start a new Unitarian church in Eureka, taking the more liberal members of his congregation with him. A year later, he was splitting his time between two churches in Northern California, Sacramento, and a church in Woodland, about 15 miles north of Sacramento. And he was also involved in starting the Stockton Church in 1911. And then in 1913, he was down here in Long Beach. He preached the inaugural sermon in 1913, but was not called to be our first minister. In October of 1913, he was arrested in Long Beach for vagrancy. A brief article in the November 29th, 1913 edition of the Los Angeles Herald says this: "The trial of Reverend Franklin Baker, a Long Beach pastor, arrested last month on a vagrancy charge, has been continued indefinitely because of illness of the defendant." It would be nice to know more of that story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Our first minister was actually the Reverend Francis Watry, who served here from 1913 until 1917. Here's another article from the Los Angeles Herald from June 15, 1917, near the end of Reverend Watry's service and just 2 months after the U.S. entered the First World War. It's titled, "Act to Enforce Patriotism at Beach. Vigilance Committee being formed as Miss Bixby refuses to salute the flag." Here's the article. "I believe in an attitude of non-resistance. I am against fighting Germany because I believe in non-resistance. I am a universal patriot." These explanations were made in Long Beach today by Miss Fanny Bixby, daughter of the late Jotham Bixby, the father of Long Beach. Miss Bixby refused to salute the flag at a recent church meeting when the trustees of the First Unitarian Church gathered to consider charges that the pastor, Reverend Francis Watry, was unpatriotic in his sermons. At the same meeting, George M. Moyle, a bookbinder, refused to salute the flag. Quote, "I hope they will not put Mr. Moyle in jail because he is a busy man. But I have no fear of jail myself," said Miss Bixby, in adding to her statement in which she said she believed in a policy of non-resistance. Following Reverend Watry, our church had three brief ministries: H.P. Pfeffer, the Reverend Oliver Fairfield, and Reverend Edson Reesnyder. In 1927, the Reverend Thomas Burns came to us, and he served until his death in 1933. Reverend Burns had earlier served the Unitarian Church in Erie, Pennsylvania, then resigned that church to help found a church in Birmingham, Alabama, and then another in Oklahoma City. And while in Oklahoma, he was also involved in 1921 in getting a Unitarian church founded in Tulsa, which is now the largest Unitarian church in our country. Our next minister was a woman, Reverend Cora Lambert. She served from 1933 to 1937. Although the Unitarians and the Universalists had both been ordaining women since the late 19th century, women ministers were not common at that time in the mid-20th century. And I would really love to know how the congregation and the Long Beach community responded to having a woman minister at that time. One more minister served before World War II. That was Reverend Albert Hamilton. And then the church seems to have closed for a few years during the war. After the war, the church was again served by several short pastorates: Reverend Paul Hennis, Reverend Dr. Robert Murray Pratt, Reverend Jack Kent, who served 7 years from 1953 to 1960, a fan in the room. Because now we're getting into the point of history where some of you actually lived through this. Again, from the short history that's on our website. In 1953, with a surge in church growth because of the post-war boom, the buildings and parking at 9th and Lime became inadequate. Under Reverend Jack Kent's guidance, the congregation in 1955 voted to sell the property and to build a new church at 5450 Atherton. The Southern Baptists bought the original church property, and the two congregations coexisted gingerly for 2 years. On September 8, 1957, the first services were held in the new building on Atherton, which had been painted and landscaped by members. The church school grew so fast in that period that the church soon had to have two services on Sunday mornings. And interesting, the two services were for the Sunday school, not necessarily for the adult congregation. So Reverend Jack Kent was followed by Reverend Russell Lincoln. Reverend Lincoln was followed by Reverend John Nichols Booth. Yes, Lincoln was followed by Booth. Reverend Booth's first avocation was to be a magician. He was also a world adventurer, a journalist, and a documentary filmmaker, and I'm sure he would love to tell you all about that. In the year 2000, he wrote this about himself: "Retired now at the age of 88, I can look back upon four basic careers that produced 17 published books, hundreds of magazine and newspaper articles, and I tried as a magician, cinematographer, lecturer, and Unitarian clergyman to bring people together in a more just, enjoyable, and harmonious society." John Nichols Booth was born in 1912, and he died in 2009. He was a graduate of the Unitarian Seminary in Meadville, the same seminary that his father attended, who was also a Unitarian minister. John Booth served a church in Evanston, Illinois, and then a church in Belmont, Massachusetts, and then Boston's Second Church. And here is what he said in the year 2000 about his time here in Long Beach: "My fourth and last full-time settled ministry, 7 years, was in Long Beach, California, just off the campus of a state university. A zebra cannot change its stripes. Within a short time, I was defending the city librarian before the city council against a group determined to eliminate classic or liberal books it did not like from the library system. I led and addressed the largest civil rights march in Long Beach history. a sermon advocating the right of women, not the state, to determine if they could or should determine an unwanted pregnancy was quoted in extensive detail in the powerful Los Angeles Times. During some periods of my Long Beach ministry, I was drawing the largest congregations of my career, necessitating double services. The Mental Health Association, of which I was president, thrived. Booth was followed by Reverend Rexford Stuyzens, Rex as he was called. He served from 1972 to 1985, that's 13 years, the first minister that we had that served longer than 7 years. Ours was also the last church that he served, although he didn't officially retire until 2000, and he is still alive, lives nearby the church, and is still sometimes active in our community, especially in our atheist group. Another incident of note happened during Reverend Stuyzens' ministry. This is recorded on our website again, and it picks up the theme of calling a woman minister way back in the 1930s. Continuing this trend of expecting leadership and ministry from women, the church recognized and ordained Junella Hansen, one of the first ministers of religious education in the Unitarian Universalist Association. In the 1970s, this extraordinary religious educator created opportunities for study and experiences that excited and stimulated the congregation and fed a passion for curiosity and learning. With encouragement from Reverend Stuyzens, the members of the church chose to identify her as a minister. Thus, in 1974, Reverend Hansen was ordained by our church, exercising the right of congregational polity. Reverend Hansen went on to serve a celebrated ministry in subsequent churches, and in 1992 was awarded the Agnes MacLean Award for Outstanding Contributions to Religious Education by the UUA. So Reverend Stuyzens was followed by an interim pastorate, the Reverends Billy and Sam Wright. Sam Wright died 2 years ago at the age of 97. Then Reverend Michael O'Kelly. Like Reverend Stuyzens, our church was his last, although he didn't officially retire until 2012, according to the UUA, and he is currently living in West Virginia, 84 years old. Then another interim, Reverend Dr. Robert Kaufman, and then this church's longest settled minister, Reverend Marguerite D. Lovett. The UUA records say that Reverend Lovett came to us in 1991 after serving as an associate minister and then an interim minister at a church outside Philadelphia. But if that's correct, then there's something wrong about the dates for Michael O'Kelly and Bob Kaufman. So it may be that she didn't start with us until 1994, and it'd be nice to clear that up. In any case, Marguerite Lovett was by far our longest-serving minister. She retired in 2009 and was named Minister Emeritus, and she is also still alive. 2 1-year interims followed Reverend Lovett's retirement. That was Reverend Alicia D. Forsey in 2009 and 10. After her interim year here, she did interims in Eugene, San Mateo, and Oregon City, and she retired in 2014. Then Reverend Stephen Furrer. After us, he served interims in San Francisco, Redwood City, Fullerton, Palos Verdes, Livermore, and now he's in Bellevue. Not the hospital. The city in Washington. And then, of course, your most recent settled minister was Reverend Mitra Ranema, who was called in 2011 and resigned in September last year. She is living in Iowa now, and she is not currently serving a church, as far as I'm aware. Reverend Judy Tomlinson served briefly from November last year to January of this year, and then I started this current interim ministry in January. Of course, that's just the history of our ministers. That's not the history of the hundreds and hundreds of lay people and congregational leaders who have served this church over our 105 years. That's not the history of our professional musicians and religious educators and church administrators. It's not the history of our choir members and Sunday school teachers and activists, or the history of our parties, the history of the quiet meetings as one church member comforted another at a time of grief. It's not the history of our garden or our buildings or our hopes or our failures or our conflicts or our successes. The history of ministers is easy to tell because we have better records, but a history of ministers can only provide a glimpse into the accomplishments and struggles and personalities and dreams of a congregation. So I offer this timeline of the church, the ministry of the church, as a framework for us to hang on the other, fuller, more personal history of this church. Those stories still need to be told. Part of our work together as we traverse these interim years between Reverend Ranama's resignation and the calling of your next settled minister is to say out loud to each other these stories of who we have been. What did we do? What were the places of hardship and controversy? What were the places where our ship nearly foundered on the rocks? And what were the places of clear sailing that still set the course for us today? I've not been around long enough yet to tell those stories to you, so I hope you'll tell them to me, and I hope you'll tell them to each other. But let me close with a few significant themes that I think I'm starting to identify, lifted up from our past. So first, this church has a long history of short ministries. Until Rex Steisen, the longest ministry in the church had only been 7 years, which would be on the shorter end of average in most churches. Then Rex was here for 13 years, and then Marguerite for 15 or possibly 18 years, and then Mitra was only here for 6. You also had a large number of ministers who finished their ministries here, or who left under troubled circumstances. Now, don't make too much of that observation, but also don't dismiss that observation either. Other partings from the church, such as Tamara Casanova Suzuki, a former DRE here, have also been difficult partings. Significant female leadership here, starting with Coral Lambert and Junella Hansen, and then your longest ministry with Marguerite Lovett, and your latest ministry with Mitra Ranama. The Unitarian Universalist ministry is majority female now, so there's a good chance that your next minister will be a woman also. Some other themes that I know are a proud part of the story that you tell yourself. You see yourselves as a social justice church. Political action and work in the larger community are often points of pride as a congregation tells their story. Those accomplishments help create meaning, and they help us justify the worth of having a church. We might ask ourselves over the next 2 years, what does it really mean to be a social justice church? And also, how could we create meaning and pride in the other ministries that are also a part of every healthy church community, fellowship and pastoral care and spiritual growth? You are a church that's very engaged in the larger Unitarian Universalist world. A truly remarkable number of the members of this congregation have offered leadership at the district, regional, and national level. That is an awesome contribution to our larger faith. I wonder whether that level of service is something unique just to the current members, or whether that's a trend that's an expression of something deeper in this church's DNA, which means it might be a characteristic of your future as well. And a final story I hear you tell about yourself is your pride in being a teaching congregation. Our website lifts up 2 intern ministers from the last dozen or so years, Colin Bawson and Denny Letourneau-Paul, both of whom have gone on to successful careers. Colin Bawson is now doing an interim in Houston, And Denny Letourneau-Paul is now a developmental minister in Kirtland, Ohio. Besides those two official interns, this church also helped launch the ministries of Katie Kroll Swanson, Matthew McHale, and now Rika Coffell. We might ask ourselves, if we want to continue this ministry of being a teaching congregation, how can we prepare ourselves in terms of budget and office space to host a future intern? A final takeaway from this review of our last 105 years is that we are not the same as we have been, and yet we ever continue. Ministers have come and gone, and the church goes on. Cherished members have come and gone, as represented by the memorial candle that burns today, or the service for Dia de los Muertos, which we will celebrate next week, and the church goes on. The church is larger than any one of us. The church is resilient. The church moves through time, carried by each of us for a time, until the burden is transferred to the next generation, and the church goes on. Something essential is never ending in the life of a church, not dependent on individual people or buildings, budgets, bylaws, or even a bond of union. The specific reference to the life of Jesus of Nazareth in this church's original bond of union no longer carries the significance, perhaps for most of us, that it did for the founders of this church. But I like to think that much of that original bond of union does carry through us today. Here it is again. The religion of this church is free, not creed-bound, scientific, not dogmatic, spiritual, not traditional, universal, not sectarian. It stands for the realization of the highest moral and humanitarian ideals of the world's noblest teachers, and to the cultivation and dissemination of the spiritual qualities of reverence, peace, and love. May it be so.